The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I was there today visiting our new property. Those of you interested in going on Saturday, it's for the open house, it's 50 minutes when there's no traffic to go down to Santa Cruz. And I don't know, Saturday, if there's a good beach day, that maybe you want to give yourself some extra time going over 17. It's a beautiful property. I look forward to the day that we'll have retreats there. It has a wonderful feeling and beautiful. It's a beautiful kind of outdoor deck in the redwood trees, overlooking, not overlooking, can't see it, but there's a river down below. You hear the sound. We had our lunches, our sandwiches out there. And I can imagine what it'd be like on retreat to be sitting out there and in the silence of retreats, eating quietly, enjoying the nature. So this evening I had something different in mind than the usual Dharma talk. Dharma talks can be an infinite number of things. When we have guests who come to give talks at IMC, I tell them that when it's time for the Dharma talk time, that they should feel free to convey the Dharma, convey the teachings of practice in any way that they feel they're inspired to do so. If they want to do it just talking the whole time, they can. If they can ask, just take questions the whole time, they can sing songs and play music, they can stand on their heads. Anything that there's no particular form, but just anything that conveys it. And and there is a usual way of Dharma talks, which is for the whoever's speaking up here to conduct a monologue and to a captive audience. You know, given my experience of how I grew up, like in high school, it seemed like my high school friends never really listened to me. I would start talking sometimes and, you know, they lose interest and wander off. And so I've happily made up for that as an adult profession. I have this captive audience and I just talk and talk and people seem to listen. So that's one way, just that the speaker speaks. But for many people, many of you come regularly. Some people listen to these talks on the web, and some people listen to them every day. And it's a big part of their life to listen to these talks that I give and other people give. Some of you have come here for a long time. And and you might have all kinds of opinions about what's a good talk and how a good talk is given and the content. And so you might, you know, especially if you've come for a long time, you might leave IMC and say to your friend, "Oh, it was a good talk today," or, "I don't know, that didn't work so well," or whatever you might say. So today, the topic, the way we're going to convey the Dharma, is to hand the responsibility to you. And that is, rather than considering what is a good talk, what are the good qualities of a Dharma teacher, I'd like us to consider what is it to be a good listener? What is it to what is the role, the responsibility perhaps even, of the person who's listening to the talk? How is it as a listener, what responsibility could you have, what capacity, ability do you have for taking responsibility for what you get out of a talk? Instead of being a consumer of wisdom, someone up here spouts out wisdom, and you consume it and take it home and use it. And what if the another way of listening to Dharma talks is to be a producer of wisdom, and that you're responsible for that? And what if a good Dharma talk is not how good the speaker is at all, but rather a good Dharma talk is one that you somehow receive in a certain way and find how it's really useful for you, what's happened in the talk. And it's possible that in the conventional sense, the absolute worst Dharma talk that's ever given might be the best talk you've ever heard. If you take the talk and somehow take responsibility for finding the wisdom in it, or finding it how it's useful for you, maybe even transformative for you. If you're waiting for the magic words to come from the Dharma teacher, someone, I'm sure that the right Dharma teacher, the right words, will just do it for me. Just enlighten me, give me the key to a wise and beautiful life, and if I just kind of somehow stay open and receptive, I'll be happy ever after, provided that Dharma teacher does his or her job right. And so far, the talk's pretty boring. It's not getting very far, just talking about this. can't we get some nice story, or can't we get, some nice, quote from the suttas, or can't we do, can't he talk about himself a little bit, because my own experience or practice, just going on and on about being a listener. And I mean, there's nothing to that. Some of you are looking at your watch. And, are we really a captive audience? If he's not really going to say much today, maybe we could. I could get home, and search through Audio Dharma and see if I can. So I think that, I've never done this in all these years I've given talks, is to turn it over to you and to have you reflect on what is it to be a good listener to a talk? What is the qualities? And there's many ways of listening to a Dharma talk, of taking it in. There isn't just one way. Different people have different ways of doing it and different ways of benefiting from it. But what has been your experience? What do you know, those of you who've been coming here for a while, what do you do? What's your role to get the most out of a Dharma talk? What are the qualities? What does it take? What are the good qualities of being a listener, or a participant, or a producer in the wisdom that comes through a Dharma talk? Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Some of you are nodding your heads yes, and some of you... So let's hear. Now it's your turn.
So for me, it's what I try to do to be a good listener. I'm very aware when I'm here that my job is a listener. And that I really want to get the most out of it. I want to absorb it. And so I think coming in with that attitude is very important. I want to be present for this. And so when I listen with my body. Mm. And I try, if I'm thinking and analyzing, I try to just say thinking, no, I note that. And I try to let it go, and I really try to absorb the meaning into my body. And for me, it's kind of like listening to or reading, I think it's called the Satipatthana Sutta, where the Buddha says the same things that are very basic over and over and over again. And so I find that when I absorb this into my body, I can call it up and say it over again to myself as I experience my life.
Beautiful. Thank you. That was beautiful. That's one way of someone taking responsibility for how she shows up and how she listens, how she takes it in and absorbs it and lets it in, get in. So what are some other ways? Do we have another mic that can go?
Like like earlier, I used to get lost, you know, when I hear a bad Dharma talk. I used to go on my own tangents and maybe come back in a few minutes.
See, that someone's leaving already. So much for this.
So it's very hard to judge, but I think slowly I'm trying to learn where, you know, if it's a good Dharma talk, I automatically pay attention. If it's not a good Dharma talk, I try to pay a lot of attention. So at least I paid attention. I practice being mindful of being a good listener. So I'm trying.
Great, thank you. So at least you get the benefits of strengthening your listening, your attention. Thank you. So someone else. Here.
I often try to not try and get it tonight, sort of make anything happen or even understand it sometimes. I remember you gave a talk on equanimity last year. It just went totally over my head. But I also remember you saying sometimes the talks come up over time throughout life, and find if I just let it wash over me, like certain phrases you'll say or certain parts of talks will come up in sittings or in daily life, and I'll be like, oh, I heard that on a talk. Very useful. But then, yeah, equanimity makes a lot more sense to me now, just because I think I heard that talk.
So not getting it means not try to understand or to analyze it in some active way, but let it kind of register in some maybe deeper way so that it returns in other times or some different process of understanding occurs that maybe happens later after the talk actually occurs. Okay, thank you.
So it's helpful for me to let myself be inspired by the Sangha around me. So sometimes if my attention is flagging, it's really helpful to see somebody who's sitting really alert and has their eyes closed and looks like super concentrated. On the other hand, other times I go, whoa, that person's like way into it and they're totally being a good student and I'm dazing off all over the place. But even just hearing that and being part of the community here helps inspire me and remind me to be more attentive to the reason I'm here. So it's a whole different thing when I'm listening online, but at least when I'm here.
A whole different thing. So that, I say a little bit, but what's the difference between listening here and listening online?
It's harder for me when I'm listening online. I'm less likely to be devoting my entire attention to that task. It might be while I'm chopping vegetables or something. So that, in that sense, it's more like what this gentleman said about it just kind of washing over me, and sometimes I'll tune into a particular comment or phrase, but I'm not picking up all of it. Yet I just still feel like it's building this really gentle, loving foundation for my life that's much more helpful for me to feel tranquil and serene than if I'm listening to like horror stories on the news or sometimes music is super tranquil or super bouncy. But yeah, it's just a nice underlying kind of thing then.
Great, thank you. It's lovely to hear. So someone else.
Hi.
Yeah. Is there a mic?
Hi, over here.
Oh yeah, so you have it, yes.
So I mainly listen online, and I mainly listen while I'm walking. And it's wonderful because I feel like I'm able to embody it more. Also, I'm going right, left. I'm kind of feeling this. I'm able to embody it more.
The words of the talk translate into your body in a deeper, more full way because you're engaged actively in walking.
Right, and it prepares me to teach yoga. So I'm doing this an hour before I teach yoga, and so it helps to ground me.
Great. Okay. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of the principle. Some people like to walk if they're trying to memorize something. And when I was in Burma, monks would often be memorizing big pieces of suttas, and you'd see them doing walking back and forth and back and forth. And something about the kinesthetic movement of the body that somehow helps the memorization or helps make association between the ideas and the body, which makes it easier for it to come back. So maybe something similar for you. So yes.
Well, I have Is it on?
Yeah,
okay. Well, I have a lot of strong opinions about a lot of things, and I know a lot of stuff. And so what I've been developing is to come in with a know-nothing mind. And over time, I have found that I am less attached to all those strong opinions. Mm. So it's a know-nothing mind I try to come in with.
So that's beautiful. So there's a famous story in Zen of the professor who comes to the Zen master to have tea. So I'm sure many of you know it. And so that Zen master he's going to get some wisdom from the Zen master. So the Zen master offers tea, and so he's holding a teacup. The professor is, and the Zen master starts pouring the tea. And when it gets to the top of the teacup, he keeps pouring. And so there's the professor says, "Well, you can stop pouring now because." because it's full, nothing more is going to fit in the cup. And the professor says something like, "You're so full, there's nothing more will fit in you. You have to empty yourself." So, but let me ask you, if I may. So, it can be very wise, especially if a person has a lot of opinions and knowledge and stuff, to kind of be able to somehow put it aside, empty one's mind, to hear things fresh. But you could do that. Reading a cookbook. You could do that watching commercials on television. You could do that, doing many other things. What is it about coming and listening to a Dharma talk where it's particularly useful to do that emptying of the mind, coming empty and fresh?
I think it's the sangha, the fact that so many other people are coming in, hopefully with that same idea, and so it's supportive. There's just a calm, receptive atmosphere here that if I were listening to a commercial, in other words, it's just helping to float all that strong opinions away rather than those other things that you mentioned just kind of reinforce them because okay. I'm reacting to them strongly. And here I'm less reactive.
Great, thank you. So behind you there.
What I love is the experience of being in this kind of an amazing group. We've been coming for some years, and it's a part of our lives. And we meditate in the mornings, and we live very busy lives. The other times, it's a part of our lives, though. And there's whatever it is, the sincerity of the people or the needs or what that add to it, that it's a powerful feeling for me, and I think it is for everyone, to just experience the incredible silence that we go into. And unless somebody has to cough, it's just a whole new atmosphere that you don't experience, I don't experience, unless I make space for it in my daily work. So it is lovely, and I really value my presence in people who are devoted this way.
Thank you, and thank you for being one of those people. What other qualities of a good listener does?
For me, it's really important to be actively engaged. And I really respect people who can just let it wash over them and retain that. But I guess I'm analytical by nature. I think for me, being a good student means to be willing to learn and to do some work. So usually when it's a good teacher and I find it intellectually very stimulating, then I'm just focused on listening to the ideas. But when I find that the talk is not so very interesting, maybe, then I start observing my reactions, and I can learn tremendous amount from that. And sometimes, as you said, the not so very conventionally good teacher can turn out to be just a treasure trove. And I actually think that you can learn pretty much from anybody if you are focused in that learning mode. I think I learned a lot from a person with a Down syndrome who used to just pack groceries at the Safeway here. So I think that's the quality of a good learner, pretty much working on learning, being focused on trying mm-hmm. to learn.
Beautiful, yes. So there's if the purpose of coming to a place like this is to practice the Dharma, is to discover how to be more free, how to not be less caught in our reactivity, our afflictive emotions, how to see more deeply into our lives, then it's a waste of time to be dismissively judgmental or to blame someone for any, you know, for a talk or for other people who are asking questions or making statements, for being unwise, for being somehow not worth your time, or, you know, there's all kinds of reactions you could have, or be irritated, or all kinds of things. Any kind of blaming. What's wise is if the talk or the event is not meaningful directly, is to take responsibility to look, as you said, at what is my reactions? What's going on for me? Why am I not free? To take an attitude, I mean, very occasionally I've seen people in a Dharma talk kind of go something like, if I exaggerate, kind of like kind of put their hands on their forehead and shake their head. You know, you know, maybe the talk deserves that, but that's not taking responsibility for where the practice has to be. The practice is looking at yourself. Am I getting impatient? Am I being judgmental? Am I being disappointed? Am I being, a whole bunch of things? And then what it would be like not to be caught by those strong feelings. In my regular life, I get caught by those all the time. And I live by my judgments and feelings and attitudes. But in Dharma practice, we're trying to learn not to be driven by that, not to be by those things. So let me use the terrible Dharma talk as a way of learning how to stay peaceful, as opposed to looking at my watch and saying, you know, can I sneak out? Yes, Don. Where's the other mic? Okay. If you have a mic, if you're finished, and you have the mic, if you notice someone near you who's asking for it, you can pass it while whoever's next is going to speak.
Hi. Is this on? So I think there's two main ways I orient to listening to these talks now. The first is completely through my heart. So there's a wholeheartedness in the engagement, but also I really pay attention to the feeling tone, the emotional response as the talk happens. The other one is noticing the quality of attention itself and letting that be a compass for how connected I am to the material. And then if I start to drift, kind of intentionally bringing myself forward again. And the combination of those two things, I find myself totally engaged in pretty much any talk I've ever heard. So thank you for this.
Great, thank you. So maybe move that one up here in the front. And Marilyn, here's...
How about now? What you were talking about before reminded me of this person I knew that came, I guess, a long time ago. And one time I asked them, I said, well, how come you don't come around anymore, you know? And they said, I've heard all Gil stories. And that, like, for me, triggered this whole thing. Well, like, I've heard all Gil stories. I'm close, right? So I've always, like, been thinking, like, why, what is it when you start to tell a story that I've heard, you know, many times sometimes? It's like, how I react. And sometimes it's really challenging sometimes. Well, not challenging. I wouldn't say it was challenging, but sometimes it's like trying to stay with the Dharma talk, even though I know what happens to the deer, when, you know. but... That like, I guess the thing that comes up for me when you ask what happens when I listen is that, like, a weird thing that's happened to me is that I was much more, like, interested in Buddhism before I started, you know, practicing so much. And, I really have a trouble, like, really identifying with Buddhism, and, like, I don't like to use the words and stuff like that. And I don't know why that is, because I really love practicing, and I'm going to practice for the rest of my life and all that. But it's weird how much, like, the more I do it, I don't so much, like, want to read the sutras and stuff like that. So I don't know. But
beautiful. Yeah, I suppose the more you learn to cook, the less you use the cookbooks. Someone behind you, or the next person?
Yeah, I think for me, maybe when I'm listening to a Dharma talk, that I kind of begin with asking myself, am I going to be willing to be changed by listening to this? Mm-hmm. And that's a risk. I might be changed if I really listen to this. And in the few times where a Dharma talk has not spoken to me, that I trust it's going to speak to other people. And maybe I'm just not ready there. I'm just not at that place to hear it yet. But it is speaking to somebody else who is ripe for that message. And...
beautiful. Thank you. It's interesting to listen to, as part of listening to a Dharma talk, to listen to it not from your own perspective, you know, what's it like for me, what could I get from it, but rather to listen from the perspective of the group or for other people, and, you know, what's useful for others, or how is it beneficial for other people, not just only about me, myself, and mine.
When I listen to the Dharma talks, a number of different things can happen depending what state I'm in and how the talk goes. There's a certain percentage of talks that leave me somewhat confused. I'm very much a thinking, conceptual person. And when I go out, if there's a concept I didn't really understand or it didn't make sense to me, it didn't fit together in my mind, I'm going to spend time, efforts just thinking about it and questioning myself. I may or may not get a resolution, but that's where I'll be left with that talk. On the other hand, if the talk manages to catch me and speak at the right level, which is appropriate for me at that moment, then I'll be going off the feeling of sense of how can this change me? How can I allow this to change me? How can I open myself up to the change that this gives? Unfortunately, most Dharma talks fit somewhere in between those two. Unfortunately, the majority of the talks are neither one nor the other, but somewhere in the middle. And maybe in the right time, they'll be appropriate for me. I think a lot of it has to do for a conceptual person like me. It has to all make sense also on a conceptual level. I can't take it in on a body level like some people can.
Yeah. So I think it's very important as we talk here to appreciate that different people have different ways of learning, different ways of processing, and not to assume that there's one right way. So if some people are more analytical and conceptual, it's a very important door for them is to go through that door and understand. Someone else is kinesthetic, that's the door for them. And I'm a little bit try to be aware, be conscious of this when I give a talk, that there are different ways people in the audience are learning. So sometimes I'll try to use different kinds of ways of talking to speak to the different people here. Some people are visual thinkers, and so giving an image helps them. And so, someone else.
For me, need to write it down for two purposes, so that I can concentrate better and so that I can remember it later. I do use it and read it later so that I can absorb it at a different time when I'm ready, or maybe the situation changes, and it helps me in those two ways. Being a visual learner, just hearing it just does not do the job enough.
But so that reminds me of when I was many years ago, I was a newer student, and I heard I was listening to my teacher's Dharma talks, and some of the talks were really meaningful for me. Then I would get the tape and I would transcribe it, and just for my own sake, because it was a way of living with the talk that maybe go deeper into it and live with it, and the transcribing process.
It's interesting to hear you say that about transcribing, because I sort of think I'm a slow learner, and I actually listened to a lot of your talks for years before I ever came down here to hear you in person. But I listen to them when I go to the gym, actually, and I'm on the usually just when I'm doing aerobics, not when I'm pushing weights. But I've listened to some of the talks, 10 or more times, and I continue to find that I learn new things almost every time I listen to a talk, or there's maybe been a lapse in my memory of what I heard the first time, but now it seems new to me. So you have so many talks, I haven't gone through them all by any means, but it's actually been a great pleasure to be able to listen to them over and over again. Yeah.
How many people have gone back to listen to some Dharma talk over again because of Audio Dharma? That's impressive. Wow. So that's really impressive. I'm kind of stunned. How many of you have done that? Yes, Abraham.
Thank you. It always interests me that, maybe I'm not so present with my immediate reaction to a talk that I feel is really meaningful to me or not. But what I think somebody else alluded to this, that we're taking this also into the future, into the marketplace, into our lives. And so often I'm struggling with something, and I'm finding something in a Dharma talk that I can directly relate to that difficulty. And that's what I find very useful. And that's how it comes alive for me, is that it's something that I'm using to change my life every day.
So a couple of things I wanted to say is that I try here when I give talks to vary how I give the talks. I don't know how good a job I do it. I don't know how well that's seen, heard by you. Maybe to you it all sounds the same. So sometimes I will talk the whole time. Sometimes I will take more questions. Sometimes we'll do this kind of interaction. Sometimes I'll tell a story for a story or teachings from the time of the Buddha. Sometimes, just kind of, so I try to vary it because, and I say that because it's also possible for you as a listener to vary how you listen and to experiment with different ways over time. So that there might be some talks that are more appropriate to sit and meditate during the talk and just kind of keep the mind really empty and very present, almost like the words just go right through you. And you're almost like not even you're not trying to understand anything at all. And just seeing what sticks or what settles or what impact it has. And maybe afterwards someone says, what was that? How was the talk? And you might say, that was a great talk. What did they talk about? I don't know. because I know for me, I've had talks as a student listening to talks where I meditated listening to it, stayed very open, very present, very concentrated on the words that were being spoken, and I got very concentrated. Sometimes when I was in the monastery, sometimes my most concentrated sits periods of time was listening to the talks, and I didn't remember what was said afterwards. So it was kind of the function of a talk at those times. Maybe the teacher wanted me to understand what was being said, but for me, the function was the concentration, the stillness, the way that the talk helped me to drop all my self-consciousness and preoccupations and thoughts and kind of emptied my mind in a beautiful way. So sometimes listening with the body or listening with the empty mind or meditating while you're listening and just meditating on the sound of the words or the words going through, that's one way. Another way is to engage analytically and conceptually. Some people, that's their tendency. It might be for those of you who it's not your tendency, it might be good to stretch that way sometimes and to actually engage in it in a more thoughtful, considerate way and trying to understand the main points. Leave the talk, maybe the next day or for the next week, go and discuss the talk or the topics or the ideas with your friends and really grapple with something. And maybe write about it or listen over again and kind of really... Sometimes a really good way to be a student and listen is to listen so well that you can be challenging to what you heard. Ask questions. Protest and say, you know, this doesn't work for me, or, you know, have you thought about this? And so to kind of come back and engage in a process almost of debate is that's another way, is kind of like be more challenging. People might be a little bit inhibited to be more challenging in this environment because, you know, it doesn't happen very much. And so it's kind of like then it's maybe considered maybe not acceptable. I'd be very happy, though, however, for someone to challenge my talks and challenge what I said. You know, you don't have to... I hope there are people here who don't agree with what I say. And so, you know, if everyone agreed, that'd not be good and healthy. So sometimes you want to listen to talk and kind of be engaged more conceptually. And sometimes it's nice to debate in the talk. Sometimes it's nice to put aside all your opinions and not debate at all and see how it registers in some other kind of way for you. Sometimes, you know, there's all these different ways, is what I'm trying to say. One interesting way that there was an English Dharma teacher, Sangha Rakshita. Apparently they don't do it much anymore, but in the old days, back in the good old golden days of whenever that was, I witnessed it once, that Sangha Rakshita would give a Dharma talk, and one of the senior students at the end of the talk would stand up and summarize the talk. You have to listen very attentively. If you're going to repeat it, especially a teacher there in the room, and kind of summarize what you just heard. So that really focuses a lot of attention and concentration and, you know, remembering and understanding that goes involved. And that's another way. And some of you might try that. If some of you want to volunteer someday, it might be an interesting exercise to see. Asking questions is a great thing, way of being a student. I put a lot of value in asking questions. So it might be actually asking questions here, but it might be listening to a talk and then going home and thinking about the talk and say, well, do I have any questions? Is there any questions that can come out of what I heard? I think the more we can come with questions, the more we kind of open ourselves to new understanding, new possibilities. But to go home and just say, well, I understood that, you know, that was great, thank you. That's okay. But to go home and say, well, that was interesting. Now, what questions does that evoke in me? Or can I, if I stretch, you know, and think about it, are there any questions that come out of this? Or anything that I don't understand? Or anything that I'd like to understand more about this? So that it's not just a one-time thing that we take it in and then it's done with, but we live with it for a while. Or it could be a simple phrase that is said in a talk, you know, and it's one particular phrase or one particular teaching that for some reason stands out for us from that talk. And it's very interesting that there's one little phrase or one little statement or one story that somehow stands out. Maybe there's a good reason in the mind why we've settled on that particular thing. And so then not just to kind of go home and forget about it, but to go home and write it down or think about it, call up a friend, share that with someone else, repeat it in your mind, say the phrase to yourself over the, you know, periodically through the day, and see how that phrase or that teaching lives with you and comes alive for you as you keep returning to it and returning to it, you know, as a repetition. I've had many times, there were times when I was practicing where I would read a Dharma book every day. This was before they had Audio Dharma and all this. And back at that, there was a short number of period of historical time when most people's encounter with the Dharma was through books. But before the book time and after the book time, before the book time there were, you listened to Dharma Talks live. After the book time, there's Audio Dharma. There's the online. But so I was, you know, my main time of being a student was back in the book era. We'd listen to talks periodic once in a while, but, you know. And so I'd read a Dharma book, and there was a period of time when I was most into my, very strongly involved in practice, that at the most I could read was a page of a Dharma book a day. Because so much was said in that page, it would just blow me away. I thought, okay, now I got to live with that for the day. And sometimes in the course of the day, I'd go back and read that page over again and over again. The next day, I'd go to the next page. So to kind of keep coming back to the same teachings over and over and over again is another way of being a good student, taking it in and letting kind of work on you in some deeper and deeper ways. So if there's one thing that I hope to leave you with today is that you have a role as a listener to talks. And in fact, I believe that you have the more important role than the role of the speaker, the role of me when I'm giving the talk. I do the easy part. I just, you know, talk. But you have to somehow, if you really want to absorb it or be changed by it or develop yourself in the practice, then you have the more challenging part, and that is to somehow translate it into your lives and make it relevant so that it becomes living in your lives and meaningful for your lives and hopefully transformative in a helpful way in your lives. And so I hope that all of you can become producers of wisdom more than consumers of wisdom. And if you can learn to do that, listen to talk, then perhaps you can learn to do it everywhere in your life. So thank you very much for those of you who spoke. I hope those of you who mostly just listened today could hear all these different ideas and find them stimulating or useful or interesting. And good luck.